On today's Next Fan Up podcast, you will hear...
No, I'm coming to you live from Moscow.
And don't forget about this.
But at the end of the day, you hope that what happens is, you know, I hope when I go out on stage, I still do my job like I've been trained to do. And I hope when they go on the field, they still do their job the way they've been trained to do.
Ooh, can't wait to hear what that's all about.
But first, we got to start with this huge breaking news.
Let's get this podcast started. Now!
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Super Fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Oh, it's been too long. It has been way too long. I feel so out of practice at this. Hello, everybody. I am Pod Vader. I am joined by four super fans today. We got a great show lined up for you all about the offseason. We also have a very special guest whom I had the pleasure of meeting earlier this week and can't wait to bring him on and talk some football with him. Can't wait to talk some football with our super fans, though, either. So let me introduce who we got on the show today. Greg is our Steelers super fan. Hello, Greg.
How you doing, Pod? Hope the weather is as nice where you're at as it is here.
Well, the sun is shining, but the temperature is not where we'd like it. But, you know, what are we supposed to expect in the winter on the East Coast? Perhaps the temperature is a little bit warmer in Houston, except James, you're not in Houston, are you?
No, I'm coming to you live from Moscow, not the fun and exciting Moscow, Russia, but the bustling metropolis of Moscow, Idaho.
What's the temperature like there today?
Pretty typical for the Northwest. It's about 55 and sun just came out. So about 55, a little bit of sun, a little bit of rain.
Interesting. More interesting weather news coming to us from across the pond. It's Neil. He's our Redskins super fan. Neil, how's it over there today?
Well, today it's at the moment it's 7 o'clock in the evening, so it's pitch black. But we have had the most beautiful day, blue sky, sunshine. But the temperature is... it's around about freezing for us, so 0 degrees centigrade. I don't know what it is in Fahrenheit, and to be honest, I don't really care. It's cold.
That is awesome. And Justin is our Seahawks super fan, so we keep that Northwest vibe going. How are you, Justin?
I am doing great. It has been too long. Glad to be recording again. And before you ask, I'm in the Seattle area. It's raining. What do you expect?
Of course it is. Just so everyone knows, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at NFU Podcast. Of course, you can check out our Facebook page, and you're going to want to do that soon as we have off-season to-do lists. Our super fans have been hard at work writing up what they want their team to do, not necessarily what they think their team will end up doing this off-season. So you're going to want to check those out. That's at facebook.com/NFU Podcast. And of course, we need more super fans. We have quite a few openings available. Even if you've heard a super fan representing your team previously, send in your application anyway, because you never know. We could have an opening at any particular point in time. So send in your off-season to-do lists. That's nextfanup@gmail.com. Nextfanup@gmail.com. We have a great email here from Josh. Josh was hoping to get Monty's job as our Raiders superfan. Unfortunately, Josh, Monty's pretty much an established member of this podcast. So the Raiders opening won't be available anytime soon. Josh decided he was going to try and be a little bit proactive, though, and said, I know this might be a little unconventional, but wanted to throw it out there anyway. I've been a dedicated listener since day one of the NFU podcast. Well, thank you, Josh. We really appreciate that. Please leave a review on iTunes for us. That would be fantastic. I'd like to submit my application to be a fill-in super fan for any team that needs representation on an interim basis. I get it, Josh. We appreciate the offer. Unfortunately, that's not the true nature. That's not what we're going for here on this podcast. We want true fans representing their team so that we get a true fan perspective of each and every team in the NFL. So we appreciate it. We appreciate you listening, and perhaps maybe we'll get you on here sometime soon so you and Monty can chat it up and talk Raiders, because the Raiders are definitely an up-and-coming team. And there's a whole bunch of us here that could tell you all about the Raiders, including Monty. Off-season to-do lists. Those are coming up in just a moment. We'll talk about what the Steelers, Texans, Redskins, and Seahawks, what those teams should be doing this coming off-season. But first, we got to start with this huge breaking news that I was informed by Neil. Chad Henne has signed in Jacksonville. This obviously is a Super Bowl contending move, Neil.
Oh, absolutely. I think certainly I could feel the shock waves coming across the Atlantic and hitting Scotland. I hope you're all right over there. And I hope with some counseling and with some support, you'll get through this massive news.
That's the sort of thing we have to deal with at this particular point in time of the NFL season. We got the combine coming up. That'll be fun to watch. Free agency, of course, is always a great time, but that's still a few weeks away. So we have to deal with Chad Henne signing in Jacksonville. Clearly not very important news to anyone at all. Some other news that came out after the Super Bowl, you know, I don't want to necessarily sit here and ruminate on the scandal surrounding Peyton Manning, but I want to talk more about what we are as a culture now and what the media does these days with our heroes. You know, Tom Brady went out, won the Super Bowl last year. He had to deal with Deflategate all offseason. Peyton Manning goes out, wins the Super Bowl. Now, before the Super Bowl, he had to deal with HGH allegations. Now he's got to deal with a scandal that's been dug up after 20 years. And then, of course, Cam Newton. Everyone was on the Cam Newton bandwagon all through the postseason. And then he went out and lost and he was a little grumpy about it. And all of a sudden, everyone's tearing him back down again. He's not ready. He's immature. You know, all the things I accused him of at the beginning of last season that he proved me wrong about. Now, all of a sudden, people seem to be on it again. Why are we tearing down our heroes, Greg?
Well, I think the one reason is that they aren't like the heroes of generations before. I mean, you had guys in like baseball, like Ted Williams, that won and shot down pilots in a war in the middle of his career. And, you know, re-upped or was pulled back in when after World War II for Korea. I mean, guys gave up their prime years to go do stuff and they were made of, I don't want to say moral fiber or anything like that, but maybe more grounded than today's athletes. I think that has a lot to do with it.
Justin, what do you think about tearing down our heroes here?
Well, you know, I think that has more to do with sort of the way we interact, the way that we keep track of people, that sort of thing. I mean, nothing that happened can get lost nowadays. You know, you mentioned some of the old heroes from the past, but a lot of them nowadays wouldn't get by. I mean, you know, players getting, you know, drunk in the dugout in baseball and, you know, all sorts of instances of things like domestic violence. You know, if you read up on a lot of sort of these classic sports heroes, they're not any better than the people we have nowadays. It's just that today, you know, if you step a single toe out of line, there's 50 million cameras taking pictures of it. You have dozens of pundits and talking heads all getting together. You have a bunch of know-nothing yahoos on podcasts who get together and talk about it. So, I mean, there's really no way you can get away with even the most minor infraction nowadays, which I think is, to a large extent, too bad. I mean, when I was young, sports heroes were heroes. I'm just not sure if kids nowadays are going to be able to experience that the same way we did.
Neil, we have, you know, in the United States, we obviously have somewhat of a tabloid culture, but I feel like tabloids are even larger over in Europe. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, no, I think what Justin just said about the sort of, you know, you can't do anything without a camera in your face these days. And the social media aspect to our so-called heroes, it's the same over here. And I think it's a massive part of, I guess in the past, we were probably a little bit naive. Guys could go off and do stuff without us ever knowing about it, but we only saw them on the field. I think perhaps, it's a great question, Jay. I think to look at it from this point of view of our heroes is terrific. But I do sometimes question, Do the kids of today need sports personalities as their heroes? I'm not sure. We do, on the other side, of course, have things like the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, and those guys get like a 2-minute slot on some television show, and it's gone for a year and nobody talks about it. Maybe needs to be more focus on the 98% of really, really good guys in the NFL.
You know, James, you know, these most of these players on Tuesdays on their off day during the week have their own charity or they're doing some sort of charity work. And a lot of that ends up going unnoticed for a long time. But another thing that Neil just brought up, you know, Charles Barkley years ago infamously said, "I am not a role model." Maybe there's a little bit more to that than we even gave credence to back when he said it.
Yeah, I mean, we've come to this idolization culture where, you know, we prop up these sports stars for going out there and playing a game. And it's not like, you know, back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s where, you know, a lot of the players back then had to take on jobs in the offseason because they weren't getting, you know, multimillion dollar contracts or even paid, you know, veteran minimums these days or, you know, several hundred thousand dollars. They had to have a secondary source of income. You know, now we're basically saying you should worship these guys because they make a lot of money. And in our current culture, the way you get respect is to, you know, have a lot of money, have a lot of influence. And that's probably why in this country, we can't have nice things. On top of that, everything is there's no nuance when it comes to talking heads. And a lot of that has to do with, you have to get a 30-second blurb in there, you know, one headline. So there's not a lot of space in there to kind of give context to things. And so when you put up very divisive issues like, you know, is Cam Newton dividing the NFL or is he, you know, uniting the NFL, it lends itself to people having very strong feelings on just one side or the other. And, you know, there's no more middle ground to just say, you know, he's a great guy most of the time and happened to do one stupid thing. You know, ultimately, these are people and people are flawed and they're going to make mistakes. And when they have a microphone or a camera in front of them, the majority of their time, there's going to be something out there that makes them not perfect. And, you know, at what point did we say that heroes had to be perfect individuals?
And by the way, let's not minimize what the accusation is to Peyton Manning. I mean, Peyton Manning's accusation is one of a more serious nature than obviously deflating air out of a football or, you know, frowning and pouting at a press conference. You know, Peyton Manning's being accused of something a lot more serious than that. And Greg, you have a quarterback that's, you know, has a history of, you know, some of the same accusations.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. I do have a quarterback that he's taken his lumps and for all intents and purposes, at least in his own personal life, maybe not his public image, he seems to have rehabilitated his life and the way he goes about living. So he was able to grow up and stop doing the things and not end up in jail. But you're also talking about Peyton Manning doing something stupid 20 years ago when he was roughly the same age that Cam Newton did something stupid when he was in college, not to the same degree. But killing Peyton Manning today, something he did 20 years ago that he supposedly already settled once, seems a little cheap and like the internet coming back on us. I mean, he has grown as a man. That's obvious. And it's probably just, you know, the last shot at him before he's out the door in retirement. And it's probably just a cheap headline grab was my opinion on it.
I don't think it's a cheap shot at Peyton Manning as he's going out the door. You know, as I mentioned, it was settled when it originally happened 20 years ago. It had to get resettled in about 2003, I think it was, because his book came out. And as part of the agreement, he said he wouldn't bring it back up, but he brought it up in the book again. So he had to settle again. It's coming up again because they're going after the University of Tennessee. And they're saying that the University of Tennessee has created a hostile work environment for female trainers or just females in general. They've had Title IX violations. And the reason it's finally picking up traction is you can associate a big star, you know, Peyton Manning, who just won the Super Bowl, is looking like he's going to retire. And so you can get the national attention on it. And if that's the only way they can change this culture. And, you know, the entire time I've been growing up, you know, they've always said, well, when you go to college athletics are kind of a no holds barred on, you know, the athletes get to do what the athletes want to do. And if we want to change it as a society, we're going to have to change that in the university level. And so we can't allow these excuses of, oh, well, they were just young, stupid kids. You know, at that point, the administrators have to come in, the coaches have to come in and say, look, guys, this is unacceptable practice, even if you are a stupid kid. You know, if that's your defense, it's not a great defense for an administrator. It might be a fine defense because I know I did plenty of stupid things, you know, in my late teens, early 20s.
But I also had people that took me aside and said, you have to stop this.
By the way, my brother graduated from the University of Tennessee. My father has become one of the largest University of Tennessee fans ever, which, by the way, breaks my heart since he was born and raised in New England his entire life. That's a whole other story. But that state would explode if they got what they wanted, and they want Peyton Manning to become the head coach of the University of Tennessee. That they would absolutely go bonkers if that were to ever happen. So something like this could also prevent that, you know, huge want and desire from ever happening. Just throwing out a conspiracy theory for you all. That's what I do. Let's move on now. We had a couple of retirements here in the past couple of weeks, some a little bit larger than others. Gerard Mayo from my Patriots has announced his retirement. One could say that the writing was a little bit on the wall. He didn't play as much this past year. About 40% of the downs, he was off the field. He ended up on IR again in the off season, in the postseason, I should say. So, you know, injuries have certainly caught up to him as a middle linebacker. He was quite good. And as I mentioned in our Slack group with Patrick, you know, the hit that the Patriots now take in their linebacking core is fairly significant. It was a weakness of their defense to begin with. Replacing a guy like Gerard Mayo is not going to be an easy task. So we'll have to see what they've got planned here in the offseason to fill that role. Jared Allen announced his retirement today, the defensive end. The question around Jared Allen that I saw on Slack was, is he Hall of Fame worthy? And Greg, I know you had a few thoughts on that.
Over the years we've been communicating, Pod, I've been a avid hater on Jared Allen, and I think everyone jumped right to the is he Hall of Fame, yes or no, after probably the best announcement of a retirement in all time. So much better than Lynch. But my point on Allen is that I think he's very, very good. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. And there were some interesting takes that Neil had on all that. But my basic premise was that I think, like, Terrell Suggs, who doesn't have the sacks that Allen has, was probably a better player when it goes to playing against a run and the pass. And I'm also biased since that's an AFC North guy.
Neil, would you like to retort?
Yeah, I mean, I think Allen will eventually get into the Pro Bowl. I do look at his sack numbers, and yeah, he's in the top 10. I think he's ninth equal with 136 sacks. He had one truly dominant season, I believe. I'm not sure what year it was, but he must have got around about 20 or 22 sacks, something like that. There is a group of players, all from his generation, you know, DeMarcus Ware, Allen, of course, and then Peppers, and you would have to look at them. They're all going to be going in around about the same time. Maybe Allen's going to get a step up on them. Maybe that's part of the reason he's going now. I think he gets there, but I think he may be like Kevin Green and have to wait a number of years to get in there. But yeah, I like him, but I would probably put Peppers in before him, and I would probably put Ware in before him if they were all coming up at a similar time.
One last retirement note is Megatron. So we know Calvin Johnson apparently has announced his retirement, but there's reports saying he might be reconsidering. The door remains open for him to play for the Detroit Lions. To me, I think that'll be a story to watch here as the offseason continues, because if he plays, obviously that has huge salary cap implications for what the Lions plan on doing. And if he doesn't, then that has huge implications on what the Lions plan on doing on offense, which, you know, makes replacing Megatron will be a difficult task for sure. James, what are your thoughts on the Megatron situation right now in Detroit?
So I came across a story online, and basically the way that his contract is structured, it's hamstrung both him and the Lions. Like, if he wanted to go play for a contender, there's no real way for Detroit to get rid of him. And there's no real incentive or way for Detroit to restructure his contract. However, by announcing his retirement,
There's obviously a lot of cap implications, but one thing it does do is, based on the timing of his retirement, he now actually has some leverage over the Detroit Lions if he's looking to get, you know, cash in on this. It would be a shame to see him go. He's tailed off a little bit in the past couple years, but I don't think that's really a stance on him. It would be a shame to have the most memorable thing about Calvin Johnson be that it's because of him we don't know what a catch is in the NFL anymore. He seems to have at least one or two non-catches every year. And, you know, it would be a shame for the Detroit fans to have to go through another Barry Sanders-esque retirement. So I hope he comes back, just because I like to see good players playing, you know, in the prime of their career. But at the same time, if he's never going to play for a contender, or doesn't feel like he's going to play for a contender, and feels that the toll that this is taking on his body is too great, I can't fault him for walking away.
All right, guys, let's switch gears here and look a little bit at your off-season to-do lists. Remember, if you want to apply for a superfan position, we want to hear what you have to say about your team, your off-season to-do list for your favorite team. Send those applications in to nextfanup@gmail.com. Justin, I'm going to start with you. I don't want to go through all of your off-season to-do list, because we will be posting these on Facebook. But one of the things that caught my eye, and it's towards the bottom of your off-season to-do list, you're going to franchise tag your punter, which I think is very interesting. Tell me what your thought process is around that.
Yeah, you know, it's that's what happens when you don't have an obvious candidate for a franchise tag. Truth of the matter, John Ryan is one of the best punters in the league, and when your team is kind of defense first, that field position battle matters a lot. You know, so having somebody of that quality who's really good at pinning people inside of the 20, inside of the 10 matters. And because he's an unrestricted free agent, he's pretty much available to sign anywhere. The reason why I like the franchise tag here is it's not that much money for a good punter. I think it's something like $4 million in that range. And it guarantees he can't hit the open market. So as silly as it sounds, the number one target for that franchise tag on the team is going to be punter John Ryan.
I definitely think that's pretty interesting. I mean, we know the problems they had last year with Cam Chancellor. Obviously, they figured those out. The Seahawks, I think, are going to remain a force there in the NFC and should be a contender for the Super Bowl again next year. I don't see why they wouldn't be. But I mean, there's obviously some key things that they need to add.
It's not as though the team isn't losing some players. You know, it has some really good players that are going up as free agents. Brandon Mebane, who is the longest tenured Seahawk, going back to the Mike Holmgren days, is a free agent, and he continues to be a solidifying force in the middle of that defensive line. Reuben, who they picked up on a one-year deal, played great. I mean, it's been kind of a revolving door at that other corner spot. You know, the Seahawks basically took a $7 million and lit it on fire with the Kerry Williams signing last year, which was a bit of a disaster. So there are needs. I've heard some people talk about wanting to spend a bunch of money on one of these like high-end free agent corners, see if they can bring something like that in. I think that's a terrible idea. I mean, if there's one thing that this staff and administration has been better at than anybody, it's developing players in the secondary. So I think that's what they should do. You know, look to re-sign your own. I think Jeremy Lane played really well, Deshaun Shedd. I don't see any reason to spend a bunch of money in free agents there. In general, it's just a very, very boring, almost Green Bay style re-sign your own and draft. The one exception, though, is I would like to see them spend some money on that defensive line. This team at its best was just rotating through defensive linemen and always sending fresh bodies, especially pass rushers. And so with the bit of cap space they get from the retirement of Marshawn Lynch, I think that's an area to actually spend some resources. The Seahawks have gotten to that point that the Patriots have had for a long time, where good players in the twilight of their careers, or players who need to kind of prove it one more time, take a little bit less money to do a 1 or 2 year deal and have a lot of success there before cashing in elsewhere. I would love to see that continue on that defensive line in particular. You know, find some of these guys, do something sort of like what Arizona did with Dwight Freeney last year.
something like that sort of situation, just to regain that depth and bolster that defensive line. The rest of it largely stand pat and just keep doing what you've been doing, because obviously it's working incredibly well.
James, let's move to Houston and talk about the Texans here. You know, you mentioned a couple of big positions that I would think, just off the top of my head, the Texans are going to be looking to try and improve upon would be obviously running back. But I think quarterback is definitely a position that they need to sort of improve on. I mean, what team doesn't need to improve at quarterback? There aren't that many that don't have a problem at quarterback. What are your thoughts here going into the offseason for the Texans?
Oh, no, we absolutely have to get a better quarterback than Brian Hoyer, or at least one that isn't going to, you know, turn the ball over five times in a game. The running back has been an issue. You know, we signed Foster. He's making about $8 million a year. He's one of the highest cap hit players at the running back position now. It's going to be ugly, but I think we're going to end up releasing him since that contract. He's only played or he's missed 23 of the possible 48 games he could have played on that contract already. He's coming back from a torn Achilles. He's going to be 30, and it represents, you know, $6 million in cap savings. What I would really like to see is them go after, you know, Matt Forte. We'll have to pay a premium, and it's possible that we just can't sign Matt Forte because he doesn't think we would give him a chance to win right now. And, you know, that's not exactly an unfair assessment, but we could point to how we've incorporated Arian Foster. He's a very similar player to Arian Foster into our game plan, and he'd be, you know, ready to go. I'd also like to go out after a complimentary back for Matt Forte, just so that we don't end up relying entirely on him for our offense. So maybe if we could get like Chris Ivory at a discount, or one of the Johnsons out of Arizona, who's probably going to move on, Chris Johnson, that would be good. But since we're going to have to pay a premium for anything on offense right now, there's not a lot coming in as far as wide receivers, both in the draft and on free agents. Running backs, there's, you know, a nice price depreciation on them since everybody's kind of taking the tack that they're replaceable. So where we could spend some money, and it doesn't really make, you know, sense on the when you first look at it, is to look at another defensive end, because a lot of them are hitting the market. A lot of good ones are hitting the market. So you might be able to get one at a slightly lower price. You also have teams like the Broncos, the Chiefs, the Dolphins and the Jets and the Rams, who have a lot of players in their secondary, you know, cornerbacks and also player linebackers. They're not going to be able to re-sign all of them. We might be able to get one or two of them in, you know, like Danny Trevathan from the Broncos. He's going to get a large contract. We have the cap space to bring in another player at a larger cap hit this year. As far as our current situation, we've done a very good job of structuring our contracts. So the only two guys that we really need to re-sign are our guard, Brandon Brooks, and then our center, Ben Jones. They're both 26. They had kind of a down year last year, Jones, because he was transitioning over to the center position. But both of them are young. They're above average at their position. And since they did take kind of a – they didn't really take a step forward last year. They kind of stagnated where they were. We won't have to pay them quite as much this year as if we would have tried to sign them to a long-term deal last year.
When we're talking about quarterbacks, Neil, the Washington Redskins have a very interesting dilemma at quarterback. RG3 appears to be on his way out, but Kirk Cousins is could become a free agent, and who knows what's going to happen there. Reports say that talks have broken off, but they continue, which doesn't make a lot of sense. But what are your thoughts right now on your quarterback situation there?
Clearly, the quarterback situation is Washington's biggest question going into the offseason, and every Washington fan sitting waiting and wondering, will Colt McCoy re-sign? obviously, we hope Colt does re-sign, but of course the bigger question is with Captain Kirk. You question, you know, talks being off, but also talks going on. I think we're looking at very, very standard procedures in contract negotiations. Cousins are sitting there with a very large lump of leverage in his lap, because he knows that Washington cannot afford to lose him. Washington sits on their side of the table, and they have the franchise tag dangling around their necks, just ready to throw it over there to Kirk, saying to him, you've done it 1 year, do it a second year, and then we'll talk. In the end, as a Washington fan, I just want the guy in. I want him in early. I want him on a long-term deal. And I think the way it's looking at the moment, we're probably thinking franchise tag, and then sometimes the season starts, get a new deal done, long-term deal. He's going to be costing Washington, I guess, somewhere around 13, 14 million a year. Cousins probably wants upwards near 18, 19 a year, and we probably want about 11 a year, but it's going to be somewhere in the middle. And the length of deal, let's get him in for a few years. I think we can, you're always a bit anxious thinking, you know, a lot of guys wondering, is he the next Nick Foles? I'm not sure about that. I think what we've seen from Kirk is very poor play, but that very slowly developing into an acceptable average NFL quarterback. And I think he has the potential to go a little bit further. Not going to get carried away. I don't think he's going to be the next Tom Brady, but I think he has the ability to be a solid starter for a number of seasons, and those seasons will just be time for us to keep building and keep building. You can look in a way at the way Denver won the Super Bowl with a quarterback who I would say this year was considerably worse than Kirk Cousins. We just don't have the defense to go with it yet, but let's hope we can get there with that. So, yeah, I hope we get a long-term deal done, but it'll be probably the tag first.
You like that? You like that?
Yeah,
yes,
I think
he likes that indeed.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think Washington needs to resign Captain Kirk. I don't think there's any question they can't let him walk away. But at the same time, you know, I talked about this on the Football Today reunion show, which if you haven't listened to, you can go back into our catalog either at blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup or on iTunes. You can subscribe, check out that show. It was a few weeks ago when I was talking with Ross Tucker and Matt Williamson. And, you know, we were talking specifically about Tony Romo and Joe Flacco and guys like that, which there's a ton of teams that would kill for those guys. But at the same time, is Kirk Cousins the answer? Like, Joe Flacco was clearly not what Baltimore paid for. What he's given them since they've given him that contract isn't what they wanted. But at the same time, they were in a position where they couldn't afford to let Joe Flacco go because there's literally no one better. I think that's sort of the similar situation you're in here with Kirk Cousins. I don't necessarily think Kirk Cousins is the answer to all of Washington's woes, but you also are in a position where you can't afford to let him walk.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely spot on. We've got to, you have to remember, Jay, we are not in the position that your team is in where you've had a quarterback for so many years. We haven't seen a decent quarterback. We saw a decent quarterback in 2012. That didn't last very long. And before that, my God, I don't think we've had a decent quarterback since. You're talking Mark Rippon and Doug Williams. They're hardly great names in the quarterback Hall of Fame. So, yeah, Kirk Cousins is the best we've seen. Let's keep him.
Greg, we move now to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And honestly, you know, from the surface, what held the Steelers back was the injuries to Big Ben. So is it really just what do you feel is the Steelers' biggest issue to get them up and over the hump back into the Super Bowl?
The biggest issue isn't their offense or their offense at all. They have to do some figuring out what they're going to do at tight end, what they're going to do at the offensive line. The real issue for them, and the new defensive coordinator, Keith Butler, did a great job of, Steelers had 48 sacks during the season, but they had no single pass rusher with more than, I think, six. So they brought the pressure from the collective unit. And so I think the Steelers' biggest need in this offseason is finding more ways to naturally get pressure on the quarterback without scheming it. Because if you can scheme it also, I think that's an added bonus. So they need to get some those edge pass rushers and another guy in the interior of the line to really push the pocket, help Haywood and Tuitt get off the field for a few snaps so they can be even more effective than they were. If they take care of that one concern, just their pass rush, making it more effective without bringing additional pieces, I don't see how we aren't going to be celebrating the seventh Super Bowl title here.
Yeah, I think of all the teams we've talked about, I think the Steelers are probably in the best place right now in terms of going into the offseason. They seem set up fairly nicely. I'm not going to go really too much into the Patriots. I already mentioned Gerard Mayo's retirement. I think linebacker is a huge concern for the Patriots. I think they still need to focus a lot more on their defense. We look at it every year. Is this the, you know, Peyton Manning? To me, it looks like this was it for Peyton Manning. Now, as I look at the next quarterback, that's Tom Brady. Brady seems to think he's going to play forever and has plans to play forever. We know that the Patriot way is not to let those guys play forever if they don't feel they can. They have a knack of knowing when it's time to say goodbye to that aging veteran. I don't think this is necessarily the year, but it's coming. And it's that time. You know, Patrick seems to be in denial about this, but the end of the Tom Brady era is nigh. And I'm not, I don't know how ready the rest of Patriot Nation is for that time. I don't think it's this year, but I also know that Bill Belichick and that staff has a knack of also finding the next man up. Is it Garoppolo? I'm still not necessarily sold. I think Garoppolo fits in a lot like Brock Osweiler did. You know, he's still got a lot to learn. I think obviously the Broncos are probably going to go forward with Brock Osweiler. But it was pretty clear as soon as they made that switch from Brock back to Peyton, how differently defenses reacted to that quarterback position. I feel the same thing would happen if the Patriots were to make the switch to Garoppolo from Tom Brady. Defenses are going to be able to tell a lot more out of the young guy than they would with Tom Brady at the helm. But enough of Patriots today. Guys, thanks for Freelo's off-season to-do list. We'll have the full write-ups for all the teams that we have on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU podcast. You can also find the podcast there. But I think it's time for me to call our guest and get him on the phone. All right. It's my pleasure now to introduce our guest. He is the host of the Jason Fitz Show, which is a podcast all about football. But he is also the musical director for the band Perry. He likes to play the fiddle. And his name is Jason Fitz. Go figure, since he is the host of the Jason Fitz Show. Hi, Jason. How are you?
Oh, man, I'm so good. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Talk to me a little bit about your love of football. Where did what got you so hot and heavy into football? I mean, other than the obvious that you're a man and you live in America.
Well, this is what I always say. When you're a fat kid that plays the violin growing up, you learn to love football. It's masculine. But the honest truth is that I was a little classical music violinist growing up. So by the time I was eight, I practiced 8 hours a day. Every single dad is a big Raiders fan. So his rule was Sunday was no practice day. And he would go get a dozen donuts and we would sit down together. When I was a kid in Vegas, they were in LA. So we would sit down together every Sunday and watch the then LA Raiders play. And it's sort of ingrained in me now, the first Sunday of every football season. In fact, wherever we are on the road, the band Perry, the actual Perry family, always finds me a dozen donuts as a welcome to football season gesture. And I sit on the tour bus and eat my dozen donuts like a grown man and watch my beloved Raiders lose. That's kind of how my Sundays go.
But they're not losing so much anymore. I think there's a lot of hope for your Raiders these days.
Yeah, absolutely. I think things have, you know, it took a long time. And, you know, I tell people this because I live in Nashville, you know, and the Titans are sort of in a down spiral right now, but they just hired a new GM. And I keep telling all of my Titans friends that are fans, you got to have a little patience, because I think what happened in Oakland is Reggie McKenzie was a first time GM and everybody thought there'd be a quick turnaround. But I think it takes a little time even for a GM to learn how to be a GM. And if you look at Reggie's first couple of years, it's a disaster. But if you look at the last couple of drafts, the last couple of free agency classes, they've built something that looks like it could be special, and they got a lot of money to spend in the off season. So 7-9 feels like one of those 7-9 seasons that could really catapult to something good starting off next year.
Now, how much do you think the relocation might play a distraction to the team, or do you think it'll have any effect at all?
I think it does. I think we always forget that at the end of the day, athletes are real people. And, you know, for me in my business, when I'm touring with Demand Perry, you know, we check the charts every day. So when a single comes out, you know, every week, Sunday nights, they close the charts. You know where you stand on Sunday nights. And when we've got a single working up the charts, every week you're checking it. It's human nature to say, okay, are things going okay? Is everything going to be okay? You're looking at the tour calendar. You're constantly saying, hey, you know, how are we doing? If you think about normal, if you just work a day job at IBM, if there's constantly rumors that IBM is going to be sold, it plays into your mind. I think there has to be a human element here where the players turn around and say, man, what if, and what could happen? And it has to be a distraction at some level. But at the end of the day, you hope that what happens is, you know, I hope when I go out on stage, I still do my job like I've been trained to do. And I hope when they go on the field, they still do their job the way they've been trained to do.
So you mentioned you're originally from Vegas. You watched the Raiders play in L.A. They're currently in Oakland. Rumors have them going all over the world. But mainly the Vegas thing has come up as a potential rumor. Where are you hoping the Raiders end up?
Well, this is a multi-answer because on the show, on the Jason Fitz Show, shameless plug, check it out on iTunes, new episodes weekly. On the show, I've really come out strongly saying Las Vegas needs an NFL team. We all realize it won't happen because they don't want the perception of any sort of affiliation with gaming. But at the end of the day, if you think about it, you know, if you're a Patriots fan and you're sitting down with your wife and you're looking at the away game schedule and you're saying, hey, let's go see the Patriots play somewhere else this year. Are you going to take your wife to Detroit? Are you going to take her to see the Vegas Raiders? And then you think about suite sales. All of the casinos would have to buy those because their high rollers need that sort of royal treatment, and you don't want to be outdone. So the stadium would be full all of the time just from away fans and just from suite sales, on top of the fact that Vegas is a growing metropolis that has a huge rabid fan base. So I wish Vegas could happen, but I think it's probably pretty unrealistic. I think the best solution, I've said for a long time, to me it feels like the L.A. sort of carrot is out there, and if San Diego decides to stay in San Diego, then I see the Raiders going to L.A. But if San Diego goes to L.A., I think the league will try and find a way to work out a solution with Oakland. I don't fault the city. I mean, Oakland has so many budget concerns. They don't need to be worried about, you know, building a football stadium. But I also don't fault Mark Davis because he's running a business. And if any other city will build him a stadium for free, why would he pay to build one in Oakland? So I think through all of it, all I want is a glitzy stadium, because as I meet people doing the show, as I meet pro athletes that are playing on other teams, I always go to them, hey, why'd you play for the Raiders? And overwhelmingly for years, that response has been no, you know, partially because of taxes in California, partially because of the stadium situation, just the image of it. You know, I want my favorite football team to play in a beautiful, fancy, glitzy stadium that will attract free agents and will attract players and will attract a great family-friendly fan base. And I don't care where that happens, whether it's San Antonio, Vegas, or Timbuktu.
Oh, you brought up so many things there that I want to address. One, you brought up the point about Oakland's budgetary problems, the entire state of California's budgetary problems. So getting any of those cities to build a stadium, I think, is kind of outrageous to consider. The second thing, family friendly and the Raiders, I don't necessarily put those two things together.
Well, the funny thing is, when you get to know, and I'll say this because, you know, you walk through the parking lot before the game and it's all these huge guys with massive tattoos and they all look, so they have a sort of an imposing image. When you actually go talk to them, they're the nicest people in the world. It's just the image doesn't fit well. But I think in today's world, I say this all the time, there's only so many dollars for entertainment, you know, in a family budget. So whether that entertainment is coming from a Band Perry concert or coming from an NFL game or coming from a basketball game, that's what you're competing against. And I think that for that reason, you have to have an environment that feels welcoming to as many people as possible if you want to continually get people to spend money on, you know, the Raiders never have a hard time selling out their stadium. But that doesn't change the fact that they're consistently near or at the bottom of the league in revenue, which means they've got to find a way to grow to a bigger stadium that will attract more people with more money to pay more for seats so that they can be a more viable franchise.
And to that point, I think there's no way that Los Angeles can support three teams. Honestly, I think Los Angeles is going to have problems supporting two teams, considering the way that Los Angeles people tend to be. And,
absolutely.
You know, I think that whole situation is going to be interesting to watch. And I wouldn't be surprised either.
And, with the Rams.
Yeah, I was
going
to say.
With the Rams going in there first, they're going to have such a huge advantage in season tickets. If it takes a year for everybody else to figure out who's going to go into that stadium, the Rams will already have a foothold in the LA market. I mean, it's a brilliant solution for the Rams.
Well, and you know what's funny is my old buddy Ross Tucker, I saw him tweet this out when the Rams first pre-sold their season tickets and they trumpeted, 48,000 sold in 48 hours. And then he mentioned Taylor Swift sells out in an hour.
Right. So it's and the deposits, it's amazing how they spin that stuff, because the deposits of 48,000, I think it was $100 deposit, and it's a fully refundable deposit. So they took some deposits on season ticket sales, but there's no long-term obligation, So it'll be interesting, because I think you're right. I mean, you look at, for years, when I would go out to play in L.A., if the Lakers were playing, man, I could text everybody I ever knew and not manage to get in there, because it's the Lakers. You can't get a seat to the Lakers. Now when we play out by the Staples Center, if I text people, a lot of times they're like, oh, yeah, you can get those anywhere in town. L.A. is it's sort of a fickle fan base. So whoever ends up there, boy, I hope they don't have a long run, because I'm not sure any team in L.A. can survive, for example, what the Raiders have dealt with for, 12, 13 straight years of bad football teams. That city will abandon their professional teams if they're not playing at a high level.
And you brought up the Rams. That community right now is hurting. They didn't want to see that team leave. And I've seen the rumors that, the Rams could be available. St. Louis could be an option for any of these other teams that are looking to relocate. So what do you think of the St. Louis Raiders?
Yeah, well, first of all, I would, living in Nashville, if the Raiders moved to St. Louis, I'd be ecstatic, because I could get a season ticket. It's only 4.5-hour drive. I would, gladly do that often to see my favorite football team. That being said, can a city lose a team twice and get a third shot? I mean, I think we all forget, because, history now is so brief in our minds. I think we forget that the Arizona Cardinals were once the St. Louis Cardinals. So St. Louis didn't just lose the Rams. They've lost the Rams and the Cardinals. Is there a point where you turn around and say, hey, why are we giving St. Louis a third shot and not even giving San Antonio a first shot? I don't know. I think that's a tough, and some people will make the argument, a city like Chicago, why is it we'll put two teams in New York and we'll put two teams in LA, but we won't put two teams in Chicago? I mean, I don't know that St. Louis deserves a third shot before any of these other cities around the country get at least the opportunity to show themselves as a viable NFL home.
I think you're right there. And we had a discussion earlier this week about your trip to the Super Bowl. So let's, as we transition to that conversation about your experience in San Francisco, what about the idea of the Raiders sharing that stadium with the 49ers?
Well, first of all, with that stadium, I think they missed their opportunity, and that's the stubbornness of the late life of Al Davis, because that stadium, Levi Stadium, is beautiful. It is fantastic. It is well done. It's put together so beautifully. They have a Hall of Fame there for the 49ers, and if the Raiders had been aggressive early on and taken what the league wanted, which was the 49ers and the Raiders to share that stadium, one side of it could have a 49ers Hall of Fame, the other could have a Raiders Hall of Fame. They could have integrated it in a way where it felt like a shared stadium. Now they'd be going into essentially a burgundy and gold stadium as a tenant. That just doesn't feel good for home field advantage. That being said, San Francisco, and like I said, that stadium was fantastic. And like I told you before, and I have to implore to everybody, if you are a football fan and you cannot get a ticket to the Super Bowl, which is true for most of us, you should still go experience a Super Bowl, because, man, the week that is everything surrounding it, from the NFL experience where you can kick field goals and you can run the 40-yard dash and you can do all of these different exhibit things for kids and for adults, to the autograph signings they have where you can meet players that are current and Hall of Famers to just the experience. They had an app that they you can download when you're down by the Super Bowl, and it gives you coins as you check in at different locations and take different free pictures and experience different free things. And they've created such an environment around it that, for me, the game is actually the least amount of fun you have at the Super Bowl. Everything else is the most. Everything else is really the moment you go for. And it's funny because the first time I ever went was in New Orleans a few years ago, 4 years ago. And I didn't have a ticket to the game. I went to a local bar with my wife and we watched the game. But we had such a blast during the week just experiencing New Orleans and experiencing the NFL that it really changed my perspective on experiencing the Super Bowl. And I've been able to go to the last four experiences now. And everything that surrounds the game, just it turns you from a jaded fan into that little kid that just loves the sport. It has that effect on you, and it really sticks with you forever. It's an experience everybody should take advantage of.
Were you at the New York Super Bowl?
Yeah, we actually played. We played the pregame tailgate party that they had that was televised on whatever network it was right before the game. So we got in maybe a day or two before, and then we played the pregame and actually got to go to the game. That was my first time attending a Super Bowl, you know, actually the game. But yes, New York was there. I will say this, New York and even San Francisco to a certain degree can't compare to New Orleans as a host, because they spread everything out so much. The great part about New Orleans is you just walk from item to item to item and you saw all of it. You know, in San Francisco, the stadium is a solid hour drive from, you know, where the actual going-ons were in downtown San Francisco. And in New York was the same thing. They took some of these NFL experience things and they made it take up all of, you know, the Times Square area in lower Manhattan. And it's like you ended up having to walk everywhere to try and experience just a few things. So I don't think New York did as good of a job just in its layout, because it's not laid out as well as a city like New Orleans, but still a magical experience.
Awesome. You went exactly where I wanted you to go, because as I think of my favorite team, the Patriots, Foxborough is 30 minutes away from Boston. And if they were ever to grant a Super Bowl there, and they should not, the whole experience would be either in Boston or in Providence, which is, again, about 30 minutes away from where the actual Super Bowl will take place. Now, Robert Kraft is also very wily. He's created quite an experience around the stadium already. So perhaps they wouldn't do that. And they'd have all those festivities in Foxborough. But I don't think Foxborough is a big enough town to be able to hold that sort of experience.
Which is unfortunate. Well, it's unfortunate because Foxborough Live, there's actually a club in Foxborough Live that I've played a few times. And that area that they built up around the stadium is really fantastic. But the NFL makes its decision on Super Bowl placement largely based on hotels and transit and all of these sorts of, how do you get around and do you have enough rooms that everything can be held? So Foxborough wouldn't be really able to handle the hotel rooms, so they would have to move the majority of it into Boston. And you're absolutely right. But what that would do is it create the same thing in San Francisco. The 49ers team hotels were out by the stadium, so half the people were sort of stuck out there, whereas the rest of the events were going on in downtown San Francisco. You'd have the same thing happening in Boston. And I can only imagine the transit and difficulty. You know, I deal with it all the time on tour. When we're playing shows in the summer, we have no problem coming in the morning of and you play a show. But when we're talking about Boston in winter, you know, we go in a day early because you just never know what's going to happen with the weather, you know. So I can't imagine Boston, you're sort of rolling the dice, because wherever you are in town, it could make it impossible to get to where you want to be simply to experience the entire thing.
Awesome. Like I said, I'm so glad you brought up the New Orleans thing. And you talk about that rather in depth on the Jason Fitz Show. What are some of the other things people could experience on your podcast, which they can download on iTunes?
I think where we separate ourselves a little bit is we're trying to do a really fun but smart football podcast. So it's not uncommon for Adam Schefter to come on with us as a guest in the same episode that Fall Out Boy comes on. I've really learned that a lot of my musician friends are big football fans. So, and, you know, it's like Imagine Dragons keyboard player admitted to me on the show last year that he sneaks an iPad up on his riser so that he can watch the Chargers game during their shows if they're playing, because he doesn't want to miss it. And, you know, Charlie Daniels admitted that somebody gives him Tennessee UT scores in his ears while he's playing the shows, you know. So we try and give sort of a musician's take on what it's like to be a super fan and try and watch football on the road. But then we also like to bring on the Peter Kings and Adam Schefters and Jason Lockham Forest to give us real solid football news. And we try and infuse a lot of humor along the way. So I'm trying to make a show where a football fanatic will love it, but the other people in the car listening with them that may not love football still want to listen to the show. That's sort of our goal. And that's what we do every single week when we post episodes.
And what's the latest with the band Perry? What do you got going on there?
Single Live Forever is out. It's sort of working on what they call adult contemporary stations. So it's sort of a pop single for us right now. And we're working on a new record. It's pretty much done. But if there's anything I've learned working with Kimberly Perry is that the record is not done until the last day that it actually comes out. So we're constantly working on that stuff. And we're doing everything from we just did a Grammy event for Music Cares, which is a Grammy foundation that helps musicians that are touring that have addiction issues. And next week we're doing a White House tribute for Ray Charles. So all sorts of interesting and cool, fun stuff while we try and figure out exactly how the record is done. And then once the record is done, we'll go on a full tilt tour. I would expect this summer it will be on basically every fair and festival in the world that we usually kind of run the gambit with. So it'll be a crazy year.
Awesome. If you want to listen to Jason Fitz on his podcast, it's the Jason Fitz Show. It's available now on iTunes. And if people want to get in touch with you, Jason, how do they do that?
And Twitter. I am an active tweeter. So at Jason Fitz Show, and Fitz is F-I-T-Z. So at Jason Fitz Show, I love having a dialogue with everybody, whether it's about music. If you want to argue about, you know, the Grammys, I'm a voter. I'm happy to have that argument with you on Twitter. And if you want to talk about football, we love to do that too. So Jason Fitz Show is the Twitter, and the Jason Fitz Show is the Facebook fan page that you can like too. And we interact on all of those mediums.
Awesome. Jason, thanks for joining us on Next Fan Up. And we'll definitely have you on again somewhere down the road.
Man, a huge fan of the show. Thanks for having me on. Thanks for hanging out. And anytime, my friend.
So there you go. That's Jason Fitz. Be sure to download his show, The Jason Fitz Show. Great football podcast. I can't recommend it enough. And we'll definitely bring him back on to talk Raiders. Maybe we'll join him up. Maybe we'll do a special Raiders show with Monty and Josh Gill, our one fan out there who's been listening since day one. Josh, I love you, man. I truly do. And I'm definitely going to get you on the show so you can talk Raiders with Monty. Like I said, get those off-season to-do lists in nextfanup@gmail.com. You can always tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, you can check out the off-season to-do lists that have already been done by our super fans. Just go to facebook.com/nextfanup. If they're not there now, they will be there soon. So keep checking that out. We do plan on keeping up the two-time-a-week release schedule here in the off-season. We still have a few more changes that we're working on. In terms of hosts, regular hosts, and other things that we're trying to do here with the podcast. We want to make sure that we're giving you the best view of the football world from the fans' perspective, but I'm also going to bring in guests as often as I possibly can so that we can give you an even wider view of what's going on in the world of football. We basically want to be a big one-stop shop for you, the fan, because we're by the fan, we're for the fan. I want to thank all the super fans who joined me here today. Greg, James, Neil, and Justin. Great talking with them as always. We should have another show here, hopefully this weekend. If we don't, you'll definitely hear one from me again next week on Thursday. And who knows what surprises that will bring. So until then, you know how I like to end it all. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.